Would you mind introducing yourself for the audience, please?
Hello, my name is Kika Derobst. I'm a content creator, illustrator, painter, extraordinaire. You're welcome. That's my get to go. I primarily paint with gouache, but I also love painting on leather bags and customizing various objects. I've been doing YouTube for a little over a year now. I graduated college back in 2021, and I've sort of been on like the rocky road of figuring out kind of how to do things in the modern age. The fact that I do social media now as a career is quite odd for me, considering the fact that like I hate social media. I don't like using it. I don't understand it. It freaks me out. I've never been able quite to get a grip on it, which is why I was shocked that I was able to like amass an audience doing YouTube shorts. It's bizarre to me, and I don't understand it.
Well, you really have, and it's an amazing collection of videos. As I told you earlier, I've been binge watching them. I really enjoy them. You're a great storyteller as well on there. I
I've
enjoy
liked
that.
stories since I was a kid.
That feels like something which I was wondering if you've got that as as kind of a side hustle where you write stories, or is there anything like that you do now?
No, it's just since childhood, I think I mentioned this in one video, so there's going to be a lot of repetition just because my life is one big line and I have to pick and pull from it. When I was younger, it was like believed by my teachers that I was like an awful writer. Like they had no confidence in my abilities to the point where my mother signed me up for like summer school so that they could like improve my writing. That didn't help at all. Just the fact that I would take so much time out of like the time allotted for writing, I would have to do little illustrations on the bottom. I didn't like full long paragraph things. It didn't make sense in my head. I was out sick the morning where they told us how to do paragraphs. So they were like, oh, you have to indent it. And so the first time I wrote a paragraph, I like had the first one long, and then the rest of them I wrote on the paper where the rest of the sentences were indented because I was like, indented? That first sentence long? And they had to be like, you did it completely backwards. I had to redo it. But it was like a long time issue where it wasn't until I got to high school and I went to a charter school that I realized that like my writing isn't like horrible because like the whole high school was kind of dedicated around writing and you'd have to edit somebody else's essay in order like whenever you finished you had to like cross-reference and I'd be reading other people's essays. I'm like, that's freaking middle school is just ridiculous. Everyone else is using like these basic words. I don't get it, but I've always really liked writing because it kind of it's like painting without the exhaustion of having to get all the colors right. You can just kind of like fit things together. So I enjoy doing it. And in college, I pursued a creative writing minor just because I was trying to avoid like history and like science classes. And I ended up falling into it. And I was like, might as well. So it's something I enjoy. I actually went through a phase for the longest time where on the back of all my paintings, I would write like a long like poem on the back because I like developing the characters. And every time that I would present something in class too, people would wait. And I was like, critique, it's critique time. They'd be like, we're waiting for the story. And I was like, oh, okay, let me tell you about the story. And I'd go through and explain the characters and what's happening. If you're like, because I really enjoyed narrative art. And I think for that reason, for a lot of my life, I was kind of pressured towards children's books as well. And then when I graduated, I kept interviewing people about children's books and they were like, this sucks, don't do it. And I tried to break into the industry and they're like, this sucks, don't do it. And I was like, I need to think of something else. Because just because my work is playful and has characters doesn't mean it's for kids all the time.
That's true. Yeah, no, I've noticed in a couple of your videos that you've had to censor certain aspects of your work, which is, that kind of sets the tone, which is good for people to know going in, really, isn't it?
It's funny because when I do censor it for YouTube, sometimes I get to my website where I like list things for sale and I'm like, oh, I gotta censor this. I'm like, wait a minute, this is my website.
Yeah.
I don't gotta censor a nipple on this. But it's funny because I always think that censoring it will make the video perform less well, but so many people find it humorous that the little like face goes around that it ends up working out fine.
it's interesting. So I mean, because your characters, they do look either from a book, with a story, as you were saying, or it reminds me of certain animated shows. So I was kind of part of me hopes that that's in your future where someone's going to just say, we want to write a story with these characters or something and create this, and you have an animated show on your hands at some point. Is it anything you've ever come across or worked with an animator or considered things like that?
Myself have done like really small, tiny animations. I find it fun yet tedious. I would love in the future to do like graphic novels and TV shows. I think it might have been in the pre-talking where I mentioned the fact that I'm like only 25, and every time I have to do like the smallest thing, like making t-shirts, it's a million step process. And just like I'm so bad at like realizing like the weight I could throw around with an audience that I haven't like since having an audience reached out to like those kind of peoples and seen if I could pursue those, avenues. It's funny because you also mentioned that you weren't able to find like background on my name. I want to just tell you that this isn't my legal name.
That was going to
My
be
name
my first
is
question.
Ivy.
What's that, sorry?
But the Der Obst, it comes from like German, so Der is the. It's supposed to be Das, which people in my comments tell me, but Obst is fruit. And the reason I have it like that is because like from the time I graduated, I had written this whole like book within like a really short period of time. My friend gave me like this size book that her grandma gave her. It was like a crappy Walmart sketchbook, and I was like, I finished my finals early, like 2 weeks early, and I was like, I'm gonna spend these 2 weeks filling this sketchbook. And so throughout the course of that, I developed like two characters. One was named Carrot, one was named Pomegranate. And I went through and I wrote these like little small Shel Silversteinette little lines and like just a flow of consciousness developing these characters. And within that book, I was able to like share it with people along the way. I showed it to everybody, any professor, anybody who would look at it. I was like, look how my book's going. And when I started that, I actually like thought to myself while drawing, I was like, every cartoonist has a certain way they draw eyeballs. And I went through my head and I was like, how does this person draw them? How does that person? And I like, before I started like the first line on the paper where I was drawing this all out with like pen and ink, so everything was permanent. I was like, oh, what if I do like a little top line, a little bottom line, and I don't connect it? And in my head, I was like, oh, this is perfect. And so I filled out the whole sketchbook that, and then it became kind of like just how I draw characters now. Like it's so easy just to draw a little like simple little face, and I'm like, that feels like me. And it wasn't, I kid you not, till 5 years later, I'm like, wait a minute, that's how eyes are drawn in anime. And it didn't click. And sometimes I look at certain anime images and I look at my art and I'm like, it doesn't feel like anime, but the eyes are drawn like that. It doesn't like click, but like it's weird that it took 5 years for my brain to make that connection,
Yeah.
but I feel like it's obfuscated enough where it doesn't
Oh, yeah.
fully. So to answer your question, it's one of those things I want to do in the future. And sometimes with like the vampire characters I draw, my father and I have like long talks about it. We're like, we need to develop something. We need to develop a world. But I have so much fears about like what I put time into these days that I'm like, do I want to go and make a dummy for an entire story? I don't think it would be difficult to write, because writing, it takes 2 seconds. But like, I don't know. I'm like scared to commit to certain things at this point in my life. It's like a fear.
Yeah. Well, have you got a set routine now for your work ethic? Have you fully locked in to a schedule?
I try to. In the mornings I paint purely because with my window, the way it's situated, from like 9:30 to 11:30, light comes in. And I like the way the shadows look in videos. Because a lot of my videos, the way they're stylized, like growing up, a lot of the art videos I watched, it was a lot of like speed painting. So you'd have somebody painting and their hand would be going like this. And I used to edit videos like that before like I, gained traction. I was like, I don't like looking at this, so why would anybody else like looking at this? So I started trying to like think about different ways I could film myself painting. And I sort of took inspiration from like, weirdly enough, like cooking videos where they have like the close-ups and you see the knife goes through and it looks pretty. And it's like, I've chopped carrots a million times, but I could watch this person chop carrots all day because the lighting's pretty. And I was like, I need to do that with art. Instead of like having the invasive camera that's always overhead, I can just have my phone and just like record little snippets, and it's much less invasive to my process. And I can get those like nice intentional shots. And I film a bunch of them, and a lot of them get just deleted to the void after time. But I found that was one of my greatest issues when I first started filming things, was like how pervasive holding a camera was into your work. And now it's like I don't even notice it. I'll be like holding the phone for hours like this, getting like a perfect shot, and I'm like, why don't it's like glued to my hand, because like I have a huge thing where like no matter what I'm doing, sometimes with paintings I'm always like holding on to like 16 brushes while I'm painting, just because I'm so like focused on what's happening. It's
Got a very
ridiculous.
steady hand because I thought you'd have a tripod or one of those adjustable arms or something. No.
No, but I think that the phone camera has so much technology within it that it's not a huge issue. I recently got a camera so that I could film more long form videos, because that's what you're supposed to do, is do a mix of short form and long form and have the short form feed into the long form. But my brain's not good at that. I film something that's big and long, and I'm like, how do I talk that long? How do I film that long? And the camera was so unstable that I now have to like, I had to go find and buy a tripod. And even then, like adjusting and everything, this like doesn't capture the same resolution I want, but like for long form, it's a mess. It's tiring. It's so much mental exhaustion behind the scenes to get things to where they need to be.
Yeah. Well, how spontaneous is the subject matter that you will, cover when you're doing the narrative over the video? Because that seems really well placed for each video. So, how does that work?
Sometimes there's certain things in the video that like spark a memory, like if it has a drawing of like a particular kind of flower, I might have like some sort of memory that goes along with that flower, just in like loose examples. So sometimes it ties in really well. Other times I have like a running list on my phone where I'll have conversations with people and something from like my childhood or in the past gets brought up, and I'm like, oh, that would be interesting to tell people. It's like I'm selling little bits of myself along the way, and sometimes I panic because I'm like, what if I sell all my bits and then there's no more bits? But I think it's just a matter of remembering, because it's hard to categorize your life so much. There's like certain aspects from growing up you can pull from and be like, oy vey. But I think most of it's just ad-libbed. Like, I don't have scripts that I write for them either. I kind of open up Adobe Audition, I record it, and if I like stutter or I stumble, I just delete the whole thing and I re-record it again so it has that natural flow. And it can take anywhere from like 10 minutes to an hour to get that right, where I have the story how I want it. There's nothing written down on paper. It's purely just like ad lib. And I think that keeps it interesting. It's funny, there was one person who commented on a video, they're like, man, this whole channel feels like walking into your younger sister's room and having them say the wildest shit possible. And my sister screen capped that and sent it to me, and they're like, they have no idea how right they are. That's just how it feels talking to you. People are surprised when they like meet me in person and they're like, oh, you talk like you do online. I'm like, yeah, it's unfortunate. I have a permanent tuber voice.
Oh.
I can't break from this.
See, I love it. I think you've got the perfect pacing for storytelling and you've got a really comforting voice. It's lovely. It's really nice to watch. So when I came across your videos, I was immediately thought this has got to be a guest on the podcast because I found it fascinating. You've got a great way of sharing things without oversharing. It's really, really clever.
Yeah,
Cool.
it's sometimes I have to send my videos to my boyfriend in advance to be like, is this too much? Like the one I released recently, I forget what it was about. Oh, it's about eating a popsicle. Like I brought a popsicle to school, and my at then boyfriend, like as I was eating the popsicle, he was like, you don't have to do that. And I was immediately like, is this too phallic of a story? But it ended up playing well, of people like getting what I was talking about. But there was a whole section where I described how I ate the popsicle originally in that audio, and I was like, I can't publish this. I don't want people thinking about me this way. It's like a hard balance walking that line. And also, like, it's funny because in few videos I do show my face, and I don't necessarily like intend to hide my face in order to be like sneaky. Like, I'm not against showing myself online. Like, there's a lot of times where I've like had long form videos and my full like face and body were in it. There was just like a few times where like I did show my face. And I remember the one story where it's the French guy. I was on the T in Boston. He sprayed me with Chanel number 5. And like I have like a 1 second clip of me saying that Chanel, like he did. And somebody commented underneath, like, I believed your story until I saw your face. And I was like,
Oh my God. Wow. People are unpleasant online, quite comfortably. Wow.
Yeah, so I figured it was just better to have the focus be on the art, because I feel like it is a pressure for a lot of young female artists to use their appearance to sell their artwork. And I never wanted to have that be a factor for people to be like, oh, she looks like this, so I'll do this, or she looks like this, I won't do that. I just didn't want that to be like a factor in anything I do. So it's even like now I've went and I've started to make t-shirts, and like my biggest issue is that I'm like, I'm gonna have to record myself wearing a t-shirt. Ew. It's
Oh
just not like
no.
gross.
Just by, a couple of comments as well, because I know what it's like. I've had the same. I have a separate channel which is picking up momentum, and the more that it does, the more it'll generate, different commenters, and it only takes a couple, and then several people will pile on to a certain. I have one video on one channel which has the majority negative comments, and yet I know it's good engagement. Even if it's negative, it's still churning up the video and sending it around. But it's not even my work, it's the guests. So I do clips of guests' work and just a little snippet of an answer which they've given me. And that can be quite, I don't know, just provocative for some people for some reason. And that's not my intention. But yeah, so I've seen it, and that's, obviously magnified hugely for female content creators or artists or just, as people. I've seen how severe it is, and it's unreal. I can't relate at all. So I feel
It's one of those
terrible.
things that takes it out of the equation. I'm like, why open myself up to that if I don't have to?
Shocking.
And I'm sure over time I'll be more comfortable with it, but like where I am now, I'm like, let's just focus on the pretty pictures.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you do any events or anything like that? Do you do any kind of conventions for comic books or stuff? Have you ever tried that? No.
I like when I was younger, I went to like Comic-Con along the lines, but it's like I find it quite overwhelming, and I haven't like brought myself to the point where I feel comfortable selling like what merch I have in like a big venue. Like I'm still working out a lot of things, and I watch videos of other people doing conventions, and they're like not quite excited about it. And I'm not sure why I haven't like opened myself up to it. I think there's like such a fear of like failure within that, of like being in person and having to be recognized and perceived. Like, I feel like I would love to go to a convention, but I feel like I'd feel quite stupid walking around with a giant name tag being like, "Hi, I'm KK." Like, who cares?
Yeah, I've done a couple of Comic Cons, and I just, as much as I'm quite happy to talk to people in public, when I sit down, I just get my sketchbook or a canvas in front of me and just look down and paint or draw, because it is overwhelming. There's too much stimulation around. So yeah, I can appreciate that being a bit daunting, but I do recommend it. And set your expectations low just in case, because I wouldn't set a goal for any kind of success, because it's just a success doing it to meet people and have fun if you can, if you fancy it anyway. I can imagine your work doing really well at a Comic Con, just with
Yeah, I have
inspiring
the
you.
extra added issue where I don't do fan art. I'm not a partaker in such of it. So I know
Yeah.
that's quite popular for artist alleys of cons,
Yeah.
is a lot of fan art. And I have a policy against it for my own personal self, where I feel like there's a lot of people forced into that tunnel of recreating somebody else's art because people don't want to acknowledge their own. And I'm like, I wouldn't feel comfortable personally gaining success from drawing other people's characters. I'd only feel that sense of accomplishment if it was people looking at my characters. Like it wouldn't click for me the same. I'm sure for other people, it's like, somebody loved my drawing of this character. It's so wonderful. But for me, it would be like, I didn't design that. I don't know. The story's not mine. I can't tell it. I'm not interested in it. I'm not messing with it.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because that actually leads on to something which I ask a lot of artists, which is about rules that you have for your own comfort or for your own style. Do you have rules as far as commissions or as far as what you'll use for art making? Is there anything that you can think of where you go, I'll never do this, or I'll,
I hate including modernity, modern things. I don't like
modernity.
modern things in my
Yeah.
art. If I have to draw a computer, I will draw like an old early 2000s Windows Vista beige giant honking of a thing. I don't like depicting cities that much. I don't like sort of like the wires and everything like that. I'm not all that into interiors. With all the straight lines, my work from very early on, I used to be so upset by this, but every time I draw a line, even if it's a perfectly straight line, it looks wobbly. And it's like I can draw it with the ruler and it's perfectly straight, but it's like there's still something about my hands that always makes things organic. And I used to be so ashamed of that, especially in the early stages of art school. They're like, "Can you draw this realistic?" And I'm like, "My hands won't." Like there's just always something that's free-flowing about it, and I used to like hate that part of myself. And then I realized it's more of an asset than anything because everything has a great flow for me. I have everything, like my main goal is to make things interesting to look at. Like I would always get a lot of heat in school because I wouldn't put like direct lighting in a lot of stuff and have that be my focus. But my focus is always on like shape and form and color and interest. Like, I want people to look at the work and feel comfortable noticing different details and stuff like that. I want it to be like eye-catching more than anything else, more than technically correct. I want it to be fun to look at. I find in my work, I lean a lot towards like making things slightly creepy, not in a way where it's like Edward Gorey, where it's like ominous, but a lot of my characters do have like a sense of paranoia. And I always wondered why that happened, but I think over time I've noticed a pattern where whenever I'm drawing something, and I typically always have a character in it, the character will take on like the mood I'm feeling at the time of drawing and painting it. So like I typically feel paranoid like 24/7. That's just a part of me. I feel freaked out most of the time. So I feel like that's inflected in. Well, recently I felt more like comfortable, so I started drawing these little imps, these little demons, and they're more like sneaky, and I'm like, I feel sneaky. And those happen to be my only two emotions, so that's all I depict. I'm either sneaky or paranoid. Two sides of the
Heard you describe it as a pterodactyl just off screen, about to swoop into your
A
character.
bird is right about to get you. I was like that though, because sometimes I'll draw it. I'm like, this is going to be the day. The eyes are going to, be in a way, and the facial expression is going to be, normal and calm. And then I draw it, and I'm like, just move that over. It doesn't hit the same way if there isn't somebody who's like, because even if there's not something directly going on, it makes you think for like that split second, like, why are they so freaked out? And then you're looking at the piece, so it has it like a visual hook, which I find to be interesting. And I just like things that are freaked out, even if they're colorful and fun.
No, it sits in the environment really well. But if I can go back to what you said earlier about your marks being more organic, the way you mark make. I was watching, because I've tried to watch as many video videos as possible in preparation for this conversation, but I realized that I hadn't seen until one video you just doing pen on paper. I'd always seen your beautiful brushwork, which is so elegant and I love it. But your pen on paper, your line work's fantastic. I think it's lovely. It's really well done.
I draw a majority of my pen work without lines underneath. I had one video where I was quite literally talking where people were like, "Oh, there must be like small pencil lines." And I'm like, "No, everything just gets drawn the
Love
way
it.
it's drawn.
Yeah, that's
That's
fantastic.
how it's gonna look." I started doing that, I think, sophomore year of college. I was like, I would have my sketchbook and I loved cutting up like old books, magazines, National Geographics. I'd find artwork and photographs I really liked, and I wanted to get better at my technical skills because that feeds into whatever else you're doing. And I realized like I need to learn how to do things more realistically so that I'm able to cartoon things. So in my sketchbooks, I used to paste on one side would be the, say, National Geographic photo, and on the other side I would just have like a pen. And I would just look at both sides and I'd try to redraw the image as closely as I could. And I had a lot of fun doing that because, like, there's nothing more fun than somebody being like, "What? You did that with pen?" Like, it's satisfying for me to show people and be like, "Tch." And also, you waste so much time with like graphite and redrawing things. If I have to get all the little details right, I'll often do it on an iPad or I'll do it with pen and I'll adjust it with the iPad digitally. And that's just my workflow. where I if I start doing things with graphite, it doesn't feel as permanent, and then you make a million changes. I wanted my lines to have confidence and strength, and now I use that to sell the mystery illustrations of Fate, where people think that it takes a lot of time, but each one takes around like 20 minutes. Sometimes I go online, I get some inspiration, I'm just sitting there, I'm drawing them, and I have a wonderful time, and it's an easy way to get my art out to people where it's original and it's custom to them, but it's at a price that seems fair to both of us, and people can have me in their house as a little decoration, which I think is fun.
Yeah, it absolutely is. That is again quite an interesting thought, which I hadn't really considered. Do you have kind of a digital mood board of references when you're doing these things, or is it all now a library of reference that you can just pick from?
So I have what's called an artist's morgue. I have a traditional one and I also have a digital one. So I have several things online. I still use Tumblr. Shocking. And I also use Pinterest and I collect different things. If I do a commission, a lot of times to get inspiration and solidify my idea, I put it all on Pinterest and then it's like a big old separated mood board. But I did spend, and I still do spend a lot of time going through magazines, and old books. And I go to thrift stores, I go to antique stores, I find these things and I completely cut them apart. I'm not sure if you've noticed the
I have.
but that's all magazine cuttings and it goes up to the
Wow.
ceiling. And I've been meaning to cover the rest of the room, but a majority of this room is covered head to toe with just artwork and photographs. And I always told myself when I was cutting them out, like, oh, hey, I'm going to use these eventually as inspiration for a painting. And now it's just what my walls look like. And every summer, when it gets moist, they start falling off, and I have to repaste them back up. And it's just how I prefer to have my living spaces. Like I, it's shocking because I wear so much black in my personal life. I dye my hair black. I only buy black things. I prefer black jewelry. And then where I live, it's like color. All my
Yeah.
paintings are bright in color. It's very juxtaposed, I suppose.
Love it. Well, it's also speaks to, because the colors on the references that you have there are kind of this lovely palette. It kind of relates to the lovely palette that you have with your paintings. And I'm wondering if that's a preferred palette of colors that you've got, or whether you just learned the mixing technique to get it to this lovely muted palette that you seem to capitalize on. Which one was
Muted kind of comes from the medium itself with gouache, just because it's so matte. I
it?
find that I really enjoy like a royal ochre palette. I like that combination of like yellow, red, green, blue. And it's kind of primary, but it doesn't feel primary in the paintings because there's so many different iterations. But with the palette, like I don't necessarily set out to do things super bright. There's times where I start a painting, and it's every time I have a commission, I'm like, I take the time, I trace it onto the paper, I'm ready to go. Several times where I've had commissions, I've had to restart because the colors I choose, I'm like, I'm too literal with the colors. Someone sends me a photo of their dog, and they're like, the dog's black. So I'm like, I gotta use black. And then I'm like, I painted with it, and I'm like, this doesn't look right. It doesn't matter if the dog is black, we gotta paint it blue. And I feel stupid every time. It's just a matter of like the most logical path for my brain. It's not necessarily that I'm like, I need to work in the KK palette. It's just what happens to come through. I love mixing yellow ochre into all my paints. It creates a lot of harmony. If not that, then Naples yellow. I never try to harshly paint things with black. I use like Parylene violet or sepia or Van Dyke brown so that things don't look too harsh. It's also much easier to scan and reprint artwork when it's not extreme colors, I find.
Okay. And is there a lot of titanium white kind of to dull the chroma, or do you try and keep the chroma fairly rich? Because it seems to have a still a sense of vibrancy to it. So do you limit how much you kind of kill the chroma with the titanium white, or do you not do that at all?
I think a lot of times I mix in the titanium white to the colors and then I'll put in a Naples. I think majority of the time, first I try to mix it with just a lighter color. So if I want to like lighten red, I'll mix in like a brighter orange or a yellow. And if that doesn't work, then I'll go to the white. A lot of times too, a big part of my process is that before I put something on the paper, if I'm not sure of the color, I have test strips. or whenever I have to cut off like parts of my artwork, a lot of times if I'm like toning it, I'll go in and try it out on the paper. I always recommend that to people. I don't think I have one on hand that I'm currently colored.
Yeah, that's really
And
nice.
that was the one for that painting back there.
Oh, that's
Shout out.
lovely. Yeah, I
I
love
just
that.
let you know, and I can play around until it's something that I feel is suited to the piece. So I always keep
Yeah.
these on. Or even if I cut something off, I'm like, that's from one of my vampire paintings.
Oh, look
It's
at that.
it has little stars, but didn't fit in the frame.
Yeah, for
So.
the audio listeners, that is, it looks like a very thin strip that's been cut off the edge of a finished painting with a lovely pink and other kind of like blues and yellows in there with little star shapes and wisps and things. It's really nice.
Glitter.
Yeah, glitter, yeah. Love it. So, wait a minute, it sounded as though you introduce an orange. Is that an orange paint or is that a mix of an orange? Because if so, how broad is the palette? Do you have wild card colors that you'll introduce, or do you have the set four that you mentioned?
So this is all my gouache.
Oh, is that in the cabinet there?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I have a big selection, and then I have a little tray. And before I start a painting, I pick out the colors I think I want, and I try to keep in that palette. And I tell myself it's a limited palette, but it's like 30 different colors, which is limited to me. I may
Yeah.
not use all of them, but I have those ones on hand, and it keeps me from throwing in like a random purple.
Yeah.
But I've used so many of the colors over so much time that they're all like memorized to me at this point. And there's certain times where like I would be avoiding greens for so long. Like I think I did that centaur painting. It was a commission. People can see it here. I'm gonna make them edit it. Ha ha. I'll send you
Yeah,
JPEGs.
please.
And with that piece, I did a lot of like obvious greens as opposed to the idea of green. And by that I mean like you'd look outside, you'd see those green colors. And then when I moved on to the next commission, which was the mermaids, make you edit it again. I found that like that obvious green that was like literal wouldn't make sense. But looking back at paintings from like the medieval era, I was thinking about like those soft greens or like paintings from the Renaissance that showcase the medieval era. They have like those teals and it's nice and soft and gentle. And I knew that the tail was going to be like pink, so I wanted to be that subdued color. And I was like, green is such a touchy color for me, where either I try to do like a really yellow green that's really like bright and stuff. I'm so scared of like emerald greens that like doing that, even just the grass on there, I'm like, this feels wrong. This feels illegal. I can't be doing this. This is
Yeah, I
gross.
wondered what you meant by obvious greens, but then it makes sense because there's obviously warmer and cooler greens that can be so complementary to the rest of the palette. But then the greens out of the tube are usually too just kind of just blunt on the kind of
Like
picture
I
plate.
love nature, but
Yeah.
like greens in the tube, ew.
Yeah.
They're
They
so
just don't
gross.
work.
I don't know why. I like
No.
I see I have so many full tubes of emerald green because I'll go online to like eBay and I'll buy lots of gouache just to like keep the hoard alive. And it always comes with emerald green, and I'm always just kind of like, thank you. The shocking thing I've realized over time is that a lot of the more expensive gouaches, like the big old cadmiums, the cobalts, not as well mixed. You think like there's a few like cobalt blue, wonderful. Cobalt violet, it doesn't want to stay with the binder. You think that like the higher quality you get, the more expensive it'd be like a legendary mix. But it just doesn't work the same way you think it would.
Wow, that's interesting. So what is the preferred brand that you'll go for gouache?
I love Holbein. I got started with Holbein. It's funny, the reason I actually do paint with gouache is number one, because painting with acrylic hurts, because all the dragging, I hate it. I don't feel like pulling out a million mediums to do this, as opposed to what I'm painting on leather, that one I'm willing to do.
Yeah.
Oil paint takes forever, and the turnaround would be ridiculous. Someone would buy a painting, I'd be like, see you in 2 years when the yellow dries. But I discovered gouache when I was touring colleges, and I had toured the Rhode Island School of Design, and they had a presentation. They're like, freshman year, everyone paints with gouache. And I was like, what the hell is gouache? And so me being delusional, I was like, I'm gonna be a RISD student. I gotta get ahead. And so I worked at, a farm stand on the side, and I saved up money, and I went to CVS. I got a gift card for Amazon because I was too young to have a credit card. I went online, I ordered the design palette. They had like two different kind of like the boxes. One was for like natural, one was for designers of Holbein, because that's like what I the brand that I had heard of online. And I went and I started teaching myself how to paint with it, because back then, back in like 2015, there wasn't like any videos on how to paint with gouache. There was like three, and majority of them were like older women who were just opening it and being like, isn't that lovely? And then the video would end. And I was like, I'm so glad we got to look at the tubes, Diane, but like I need to know what they look like. So I had to like teach myself how to paint with it, which I think has really determined how I work with it. Sometimes I talk to people and they make gouache all liquidy, and it's like they use it like watercolor, or they use it really thick, and I'm like, what are you doing? So it's a lot of trial and error to get to the point where I am, but like I'm ever so glad I toured RISD, even though I didn't get in, because I learned about gouache, and it's like the only medium where you can just you put the paint to the brush, you draw a line, the line is there. It's like digital but traditional. It's perfect for me.
We have been working on something in the background.
We've had previous guests revisit the channel to give us additional content, everything from studio tours, sketchbook tours, talking us through the process of paintings, and all kinds of additional treats, which you're exclusively going to see as a patron who supports the channel.
So by supporting us on Patreon, you help the channel keep going. There's a lot of work put into this, from the video editing to the sourcing of guests. So you really help us find those guests and to put the content out.
We have lots of content planned for the near future. So the links for that will be in the description of this video and in the description on the podcast channels. And otherwise, you can go on to Patreon and type in Painting Insights Podcast and support us that way. Thanks very much. Enjoy the video. Is there a preferred brush company as well, if it's Holbein for the paints?
No, it's Holbein and Winsor & Newton. Those are the two big
Okay.
ones for me. Everyone else, like the binders, they separate like that from the pigment, and I can't deal with that. When I squeeze something out onto my little palette and it's suddenly all juice, I hate it. They're like, oh, you can just mix it back in. It's not the same. It doesn't work the same. My favorite preferred brand of brushes, weirdly enough, has turned out to be Princeton. I never thought that I would have a preferred brand of brushes. Just when you start out, especially with acrylic, it's like as long as it smears stuff, who cares? And then when it comes to watercolor, it's like the best one is Kolinsky with all the sable hairs, and it's nice, and you do long drags. I have found that like Princeton, despite the fact that like buying a single brush for like $5 to $20 feels insane, it like it snaps back. And if I have like I'm doing all my thin lines and all of a sudden it splits into two, I'm gonna strangle somebody. So I find that like it is the best and most easily accessible for me, where like every time I go into Blick, I'm like, let me just swing by the little blue Princeton Select section and pick up another liner brush. And that's the easiest for me. There's a lot of different brushes I use from like over the years, but I always kind of reach for like liner brushes. I love a filbert. I like, the nice rounded edge, and I like my flat angle brushes. I'm actually using my brushes to keep my iPad up so I can like reach over you. A dagger.
Lovely.
This one hasn't been used yet. Isn't she
No,
pretty?
it is
She's
very pretty.
brutal.
Same as my niece genders everything female as well. It's like she's like this. She does that with the weather and everything, my niece. So yeah, I've noticed that.
Well, I mean, it does say dagger striper. That's like one letter off from stripper. So, oh my. Maybe she's a Chippendale key.
I remembered what I was going to say earlier as well, because of you saying about the thick paints for gouache. It just reminded me how, because I interview majority oil painters, they will sketch with gouache quite thick. And it's interesting. I've only ever tried it the way that you do it, in a way, not nearly as good as the way you do it. I kind of do watercolor and then certain elements gouache. And I've only tried it a handful of times. It's not been
See,
incredibly
you're already on
successful.
a better path, because I know people that put down a layer of acrylic and then do gouache on top of it. And when I heard that, my head exploded. You're going to take this nice paper and then fill every pore with plastic and then put a water-based medium on top of it. Are you crazy?
Yeah, that's weird.
I can get like painting underneath for an oil painting though, because it's so like it's such a simple medium that you can cover it with anything. And it just like stays there. It's so well behaved. Like the least naughty medium. But some people can't get the handle on it. I always try to describe to people because occasionally I'll go places and I'll do demos for people. But they find it quite gross because they're like, what is the water to paint consistency? And I'm like, the only way I can describe it, and I'm so sorry, is diarrheal. It's the only word I've been able to picture. I'm like, it's not like butter. It's not like that. It's like everyone's had diarrhea at some point. That's kind of the consistency you're going for with your paint. You need a little bit of water, you need to remove some of the water, and then add it in. And it's sort of like that sludge from when you get food poisoning. I don't know how else to describe it to you. But I mean, I feel like it's the best way. Because like other times people are like, I tried painting, it doesn't work. And I'm like, well, you gotta go diarrheal. It's gross, but it's the only way. I'm pretty well versed with words. I've searched high and low for a better one, trust me. I haven't been able to find one better.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, I've heard an oil painter describe to me the way that she thinks I should mix acrylic because she's very experienced and she says like thin custard, but we have a lot of custard over here. So I think that may be a UK thing where we're thinking of kind of like a thin custard mix as opposed to a really thick custard.
I feel like pudding is too jiggly. I feel like that's our American equivalent is pudding, and pudding, it
Yeah,
has
that's
too
the
much.
thing. I don't think it translates, does it, really, to the US?
Well,
So,
because diarrhea is dense, it washes dense. I can't be like the inside of a lava cake. That's too obscure. It does. It works. It's visceral.
But anyway, to sorry, I can't. Speaking of the thickness of the paint, though, do you keep it thin on the surface? Because it looks as though you keep the layers thin. It doesn't build up thickness really too much on the surface,
A
or.
lot of times, the way I paint, I've tried to do it the more traditional way where you like lay down something flat and then like build on layers or blend things out. And I'm always like, it's not working the way. I kind of draw and paint like a computer where I have certain parts. And instead of laying down like a huge flat swath of color and then doing detail on top, say like you have like a curtain and it has all the little wibbles, I'll do like the bright parts in one solid wash, but then I won't paint in the dark shadows and I'll leave that blank paper until I go in with a darker color. And then like the fine details, like the line work, I'll put that on top. But like when it comes to big swaths of things, I don't like layering up a bunch of colors. I know when I want things to be darker, I know what color I want things to be. For me, it's just a matter of getting to like having the drawing done, and then it's like a paint by number that only I have the diagram to, and I'm just filling things in, and it's quite lovely. Sometimes I'm in a sour mood because I'm doing a bunch of like kind of behind the scenes things and like editing and like doing mail, and I'm like, why am I in such a sour mood? And I'm like, I haven't painted in a few days. That's why I'm cranky. I haven't just sat there and like painted, and I did that yesterday, and I was able to do my whole little.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, look at that. That's
There's a
lovely.
frame that goes along with it. Hold on.
Yeah.
It's like a tavern sign.
Oh wow, look at that. Oh, that's fantastic.
It goes
Oh, so it's
in.
gonna hang in the middle. That's beautiful. I love that.
Right? And
That's
then this morning, you're gonna cry over this. This happened to me. I was varnishing her. I did her with the Holbein acrylics, matte acrylics, and I usually don't touch acrylic because I gessoed this. I did seven layers of gesso, and still, when I went over it,
Oh no.
I have to refix it. I have to go back
Yeah.
in and fix it. For the viewers at home, I'm holding an oval painting of a mandrake, of which I varnished, and therefore the acrylic somehow got re-wettened and lifted up, even though it's been drying overnight. So now
Yeah,
I
it
have to
looks
go.
like a teardrop almost coming in, bleeding into the center, which is oh, that is sad. Oh
Right? Stuff like
no.
that always happens to me. There's always like, I'm like, okay, one last thing, just have to do one final step, and then there's like a hair in it. And I'm like, it's like, ugh. Stupid.
Nothing's ever simple. But yeah, that did something I did want to ask you, and that's led into it really naturally, actually, is there much room for experimentation in your process because of how much you say it's almost like a paint by numbers? Do you still find room for experimentation in that process?
Every once in a while, like I feel a calling to do something, and then I find it's interesting and I'll introduce it. Other times I end up having to restart on things. One example of it going well is when I started including dry brushing. For the longest time, I was so obsessed with things being flat and smooth that I didn't allow for that interesting texture to be made. And then I started playing around with it. And I have one painting that's a Birth of Autumn vampire, and there's a lot of bruising. There's a lot of bruising on the character, and I find that it'd be really hard to do that blending with gouache if I were to do it the way I typically do, which is like, the flat layers, because it would require so much cell shading into that dark color that I developed like a way to do it with dry brushing, and then I went and realized I liked it because it's great for blood, it's great for stains, it's great for texture and fabrics in like certain amounts. Too much of it just starts to feel like everything's fuzzy and it's too obvious. And I went and I got paintbrushes specifically for that. There's sometimes where like I look at people's artwork with I'm like critiquing it with them, and I'm like, I know exactly what paintbrush you used for this, and it freaks them out. So I'm like, that is a 1-inch flat angle brush. You made that one by just taking your dirty like handkerchief and you patterned it on. Like I can tell. And I'm like, sometimes I'll look there, I'm like, you need more brushes. And they're like, yeah, I have like five. I'm like, you feel like sometimes it's really easy for people to feel guilty about buying art supplies, I think, when it's like tools of your trade. And I made a video recently where I talked about like buying an extra like 100 gouache that I found on eBay, even though I had a majority of the colors. I'm like, if I were some dude with like a garage and I went to Home Depot and I buy like two tools, I'd probably be at around the same cost as like majority of the supplies I own collectively. Like, I'm not gonna feel bad about it, because if some dude brought a chainsaw, we'd be on evil foot, like same footing here. I'm not gonna feel bad about it. That's how I gauge things. I'm like, this is normal. Just because it's like something that I also enjoy doesn't mean it's devilish to indulge in. Some people just need to realize that they're pushing themselves down. I think also it's a great advice for younger artists. You may feel inclined to buy like this student grade paint and like try things out that way. I think it's so much better to buy like a small amount of amazing quality materials and work with that, because if you go into like a crappy sketchbook and you're trying to do paintings in it and it's like it feels awful sensory wise to use those mediums, you're not gonna feel the joy of working with that medium, and you're not gonna feel the trust to go into the bigger supplies that actually make that medium possible. I think lower quality gouache is just watercolor and people are lying to themselves. It doesn't look good, it looks streaky, it looks thin, it's bad. What was the other half of this question?
Just about experimentation in your
Oh.
process.
Yeah, other times like I said, I was watching somebody also on YouTube Shorts, they were doing oil paintings, and I was like, I should paint my people like that. I should paint in gouache like people do in oil paint. And there were several paintings I did like that, where I was like, holy smokes, this is awful. And it's funny because that painting that I had that experience with, where I did an oil painting style, I recorded the fact that I had painted it, and I did a video about like sometimes you do a painting and then you hate it and then you wash it off, and I have myself washing this thing off in the sink and I repainted it, and then no one's bought that.
Oh no.
So many of my paintings, like I'll put them up and then within like a month's time they're gone, they're onto like their collector, and it's like I never have to look at it again. That specific painting is just like, she's been living with me, she's in this very room, she's hiding somewhere off in a corner, but I'm like, everyone thought that it looked better the other way, but I'm like, if you saw it in person, it looks so bad. It's the colors were so bad. Like, I can't always get it right. Sometimes I'll sit down on like a Saturday morning when I shouldn't be painting because it's the weekend, and I'll be like, I gotta get this done, I gotta get this done. And then like it's 12:30. I've been painting without thinking for 3 hours, and I'm like, no. We gotta call a loss. It's quite
Yeah,
bad.
that's good to know. And like how to fix things when they go wrong is another important one to learn. And I think that you've obviously clocked in the hours to know how to do that. Is there anything which you can recall about this one went wrong and I had to, because obviously I have the bleeding with the varnishing of that lovely oval piece earlier. Is there anything else where it's kind of it's gone wrong and you've been able to correct course and steer it back to a nice clean illustration?
With gouache, you have the added ability of being able to take a clean brush that's like slightly, very slightly damp, and you can kind of like lightly abrase it against something to remove that pigment. And sometimes you can remove enough pigment where you can put another layer over it, but sometimes the line work kind of shows through, so you have to be careful with it. If you want, I can cut camera for a second and grab a piece
Yeah.
that I started to paint, and then I have it how I actually painted it, so you can see when I realized to stop painting. Do you want
That
that?
would be amazing. Yeah, please.
One second.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm back.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm in the future, like next month, May, I'm going to be starting a Patreon, so I had to get the gears in turning to do that. Spoiler, I don't know. So I wanted to have my first painting be this sort of Rococo piece.
Love
It's
it.
lovely. I wanted to get it done so much sooner. Yay, fun details, fun
Fantastic.
palette. So
Yeah, I
excited about
love it. Yeah.
that. The first time I painted it, I started painting it on a Saturday morning. Always a mistake. And I decided to have my background color be this neon pink. I don't even know how I achieved that color with gouache. That's horrendous. But the face is so pretty. It felt so bad to like
Yeah.
get rid of it, but like I could tell really early on that like that's not
Wow.
working. Like
Yeah.
the comparison between the two. I actually had
That's
to go in and do a color study, which is unheard of for me. I typically don't do that. I just go in and I'm like, I know what's gonna happen. I thought she's gonna have a lovely pink dress. I even tried to paint over her. This was
Yeah.
original pink. It feels awful. I don't like looking at it. It makes my brain hurt. I'm sure if I kept painting on it for like ever, it would have been fine, but like
Well,
you
I
said a lot
appreciate you
about.
sharing this because that's really interesting as well to see side by side what's happened and how you changed it. And it seems like so weekends are a no work couple of days for you. You kind of take weekends off.
I sometimes, like during the week, there'll be times where, like, after 3 p.m., I'm calling it quits. So sometimes I'll make up for work on Saturday and I'll be like, I feel accomplished. And then the rest of the day, I let myself go on and play my medieval games. And I'm quite excited about that. But Sundays are like most permanently for my partner and I, where we go out, we go antiquing, we'll go to cafes. And I used to, when I first started my YouTube channel, I had a thing called Goth Girl Saturdays, which sounds terrible. Because we hang out on Saturdays. And I would do like a sort of mini vlog. And I was like, as I was filming it, I was having fun editing it. And I was like, oh, it's great to give people like a little snippet into my life. And that was when I had like 50 subscribers. So like it would get even less views than my other videos at the time. And then I quickly realized that I didn't want to exploit my boyfriend and myself during that time where I'm so focused on capturing it and getting little snippets and saying things and making sure that it's correct, that it would be exhausting and it would ruin the day. So sometimes he's still like, he didn't ask me to stop filming that. He was like, sometimes he's like, oh, we could do that. And I'm like, I don't want to sell you.
Yeah,
And he's
that's
a
really
creative
good.
person too. I think I've mentioned in a few videos or in comments that my partner's a boyfriend.
That's it's creative of
My
him.
partner is a jeweler.
Wow,
So very often he'll bring
it's
me, you know,
lovely.
fun trinkets and rings, and I quite love
Oh,
it. And it's nice though because when I was
wow.
younger, and I'd like go through a breakup, I would write on a big list. I'd be like, "What traits do I want in a partner?" And I always wrote that I wanted them to be artistic so they understood me. But I
Yeah.
didn't want them to be an artist because I'd be in competition with them and I would absolutely smoke that man. So it's lucky I found someone who's an artisan and like a jeweler in his own right,
Yeah.
but not the same way where he appreciates my artwork. I appreciate his, but we don't cross
Great.
paths.
Perfect. Perfect match. So is your little sister or your dad, are they creative? Do they paint or draw?
I'm actually the youngest.
Oh,
The
really?
youngest.
Oh, sorry. When you
No.
said sister, really, I
I
thought
have an
you.
older sister. She's wonderful. My father, he has his master's in writing and he quite enjoys sci-fi. I don't think there's been a moment in my life where he hasn't been in the middle of some sci-fi book. Actually, a huge inspiration for my work is that when I was a child, he had his big office. And since he always loved books since he was a kid, he had a huge collection of like pulp fiction, like sci-fi and fantasy books. So, and he'd be up there typing, doing his stuff. I'd wander around his office, bothering him, just pulling out these books with these half-naked ladies and minotaurs, and I'd be like, nice. So I think like that kind of soaked into my subconscious where like nowadays I love drawing weapons. My father's a huge collector of like weapons, so I grew up really like familiar with those. I think in one story I mentioned the fact that I do have a birth sword. And it's funny because in that video, it's one of the rare ones where it has my face. People were like, face reveal. But some people were like, show us the sword. I'm like, it's in the video. You've seen my sword. I have no idea where I was going with that. What are we talking about?
About your dad being kind of creative in his writing and things, yeah.
Yeah, so my father enjoys like writing and stuff like that. He was, or he is, he's a veteran, so like he loved like creativity art, but he like, this is such a fun fact about my dad. I grew up like Baptist Christian from my like mother and like going to that church, and my father ne never went to church with us, and I never knew why. And it was only like years later I realized that my father praises the Nordic gods.
No, really.
So I left. I could have had a way cooler childhood. if he, embraced that, if they got together and like decided on that, that could have been great. I also make fun of my dad because he has wonderful like green eyes, and both my sister and I have blue eyes. We're like, he could have shared, cool, I would have loved to have green eyes. But my father kind of is like a person who has like a lot of like experience and dry humor, and he always like encouraged me to do art. And it was funny because during school, I would have teachers sometimes say like, because someone would say something in critique, and I would take it like I would internalize it. My teachers thought I would be like really upset, but I'm like, I'm just soaking it in. And they're like, well, you have to expect like, several of them, they must have had a meeting at some point, because several of them during the same week told me the same thing, like, we aren't your grandma or grandpa, we're not your parents, we're not gonna like coddle you, And I was like, my dad doesn't coddle me. My father, throughout my whole life, anytime I brought him, even to this day, if I bring him a piece of art, he's not like, so amazing, baby girl, good job. It's not like a little dog. It's like since childhood, I'd show my art, he'd go like, you could have improved that. You could have done a little bit better. Like, what are you trying to say with this? What do you think you'll do next time? And it's never a matter of praise. It was always a matter of like, I think you can do more. And it used to piss me off as a kid. Even like I tell people, like the first week I went to art school, my father was driving me in, and he like the car was quiet. We were driving. He's like, I have something really important to tell you. And I was like, what is it? And he was like, I need you to know when you go there, you're not going to be the best one there. I was like, and then I ended up graduating with departmental honors. So I got. He's very proud of me now, but it took some time. Even now, though, I'll like show him something like this, and he's like, oh, what about doing this? What are you gonna do for the next one? He's always like inquisitive. He has like an interest in a way that's very, he's a very blunt person. So like whatever's on his mind, he's like, when are you doing that? When's this happening? It's
It's kind of
I
sounds
end up
quite
having a
good.
moment to myself. I'm always just like his brain, though. I have two minds inside myself at all times. It's my brain and my father's brain just floating over me,
It does
which is
sound like
cool.
a
The
healthy,
day he dies, he'll still be there.
yeah. But yeah, it sounds like a healthy relationship where he can give you that type of feedback without having to worry about your reaction because you trust him. So yeah, that's really important. That's great. But yeah, I mean, and also, I don't think this is necessarily something which you do, but I'll ask anyway. Have you done or considered any exhibitions of your work in galleries?
That's my goal for 2025, but I am so like scared because when I did graduate, it's one of those things I reached out to, and a lot of the museums I saw during the time were looking for abstract work. And it was also, I graduated during the pandemic. So it was a mix of that, like nobody knows what's happening in the world at all, and a mix of like people are looking for non-literal things. My work is very like graphic and literal. A lot of people think it's suited for more like print media type things, like graphic novels and stuff. So it doesn't fully, at the time, like with what I had in my portfolio, it wasn't like something I could show to a gallery and be like, put it on your wall and sell it to a millionaire. Have fun. My goal for 2025, now that I've kind of accepted that I'm more of a painter than illustrator, well, I'm kind of both, but like I lean more towards painter, even if things are more illustrative. My goal for 2025 is to just at least be in one gallery showing in like Boston. I'm not even shooting for New York. I'm like, and it's like, it's insane to say it like that because I'm like, I'm sure I could be like, hey, I have a following. Please let me do something. But like, it feels wrong. It feels so like there's times where I've reached out to brands and I've been like, hello, I have people. And they're like, do you? But it's fun. I've had a recent like flurry of people from like art brands reach out to me and be like, we want to send you a present. I'm like, for me? Wow. I have a nasty habit though. Every time a company reaches out to me, I'm like, can you send me something more? Like, you have a lot of cool stuff. Can I have more? I want to play with that. And they're really
You do
nice, and they
it.
usually say yes. It's one of my
Brilliant.
things. If somebody like offers you something, be like, what else?
Yeah, no, I love it. You do that, absolutely. That's fantastic. Well, that's something to look forward to as well. And I want updates. I want to be able to have an update from you about any exhibition that you have. Because if we can help generate any interest and get any attendees there for you, we will do that. Because it'd be lovely to see.
Got a plan pieces. I had originally this huge thing of like egg pieces I had planned, and then I ended up like scrapping it. So I have like
Yeah.
one big egg piece, and I haven't even sold that. It needs to go somewhere. I'm sick of looking at it. It's like the longer something is in this room, the more likely I am to destroy it accidentally. That's just a running chance with me. I will spill something at some point.
There'll just be a cave in from all your pasted up magazine references and just collapse on them. But what was
Fall
it?
down. Like,
Is there anywhere that people can see your work in person? Is there anywhere where it works up anywhere? No. So
they can
that
see
is
it
the
in
goal
print
this year.
if they order a Mystery Illustration of Fate or original painting or a print, and then they can look at it.
Okay.
That's like the main way. I don't like, I'm so focused on like my current schedule and with videos and like trying to get like the most basic parts down of having a small business that like things beyond that point, it feels so daunting that everything is a learning curve. Like,
Yeah.
even with this, like just doing a t-shirt, I'm like, I started this back in October of last year. You have to
Yeah.
like order something that has to come in the mail and then you don't like it. You have to find another company or like ordering just like large prints. A majority of the prints I sell are just out of the printer. I'm like, that's easy for me to do. It's on hands, all hands on deck. But like getting some 16 by 20 prints, getting it to where the cost is right for me and the consumer and like the shipping is right and the quality is right. Such a headache. So many times you like go online, you do your research, you come back in, you're like, I got this. We can do this, and it just doesn't look right. And I don't feel comfortable like selling something to somebody if I don't have like any modicum of confidence in it. I just can't. I don't want to be a huckster. I'm trying to avoid charlatan status as much as possible.
Well, you're definitely not that. I've seen you do quality control with your wolf. Was it a Beowulf? Is that what it is? Beowulf print? No? Some kind of wolf? You did a wolf of some kind?
Direwolf.
Direwolf, sorry. I'm not very well versed in kind of things like that. So, Direwolf.
I don't post the titles anywhere. I don't expect anybody. Sometimes I get emails of people just being like, I need the art from this video. Can you provide that? And I'm like, here's the title. Sometimes I try to make it obvious and I'm like, it's hard because like with the mermaid piece, I title it Babis and Rudolph, which is the name of the characters, but like only me and the commissioner know the names of these freaking characters. So it's like Babis and Rudolph, mermen.
Yeah, but your direwolf anyway, I'd seen that your quality control with having the prints with rounded edges, and it just looked like such beautiful quality. It was really nice. So I know that you're obviously never going to be in huckster status. Your quality control is right up there, and I love that.
Try.
It's
I round
great.
the itself.
I mean, to be honest, I'd love to see your work on kind of skateboards or something like that as well. It'd be perfect on there, you know, it'd really suit
No,
it.
there's so much product design I want to get involved with, but it's a matter of like making those connections, which would be the important part of going to cons. It's like part of the reason I don't have more, like I didn't post earlier on when like I could have been, is because like it takes much longer for me as a person to make those connections in my brain. A lot of people like are always like, I'm a fast learner. I'm like, not me. I've always loved to say that I'm a fast learner. I am so not. And like nowadays I'm more comfortable like saying that. It's like I will try and fail so many times to get something right. There's so many learning curves. I'm so tired of the learning curves. Like the G-force has gone too much where sometimes I have to step back from things because I'm like, everything's going to take forever, but like by the time I get there, I'm going to feel comfortable with it. Because like even with my videos, when I first started recording them, I was like, I'll just do like some light research into something and then I'll do a informative video about it. And I was like reading off a script. And when I started YouTube, every video had to be exactly a minute long because that's like the maximum of time. They've changed it to 3 minutes, which has been a lifesaver for me. You know how hard it is to shorten down life stories into 1 minute? It's crazy. Where I was like reading off a script and it felt so robotic and bad. I'm like, if I don't like listening to it, if I don't like touching it, if I don't like looking at it, I'm not putting it online. Which is a great thing for people if they're like interested in doing like what I do, is to like be like, would you look at it? Would you look at a like a low lit pencil sketch on a piece of scrap paper on a table? No, you wouldn't give it a second thought. It's not Pinterest worthy. So I try to think about that. But like sometimes I feel bad because I always post pictures of me holding my art, but I think I mentioned this in the pregame that I'm so afraid of people like AI eating my artwork that I'm so private about it, where I like giving it out to the world as much as I could. Because like, I would love to like post my art online and have people just use it as their phone background or whatever, because I don't mind that. But it's a matter of like companies being like, we are you now. And I'm like, you're not.
No,
A
you're
huge
right to
thing.
be cautious. I mean, I saw
Company.
your story about a person adding an extra T to the end of your name and then being on TikTok.
Which was crazy because I hate Googling myself. I'm so afraid something's gonna pop up and it's gonna be like I'm gonna find out I'm wanted in three countries or something. Like I don't know why. It's irrational because I'm like, I'm the only one putting out stuff about me, but like what if there's something else? Like I don't wanna know. If there's like a Reddit forum out there that's like, we hate this woman, I'm like, that's their problem. They have the right to have that. It's whatever. Because even like now I'll get like comments on videos that are like, your voice is so annoying, and I'm like, that's fine.
It's the opposite,
Don't like
honestly.
my own voice
Don't
either.
listen
But with that scenario where like my boyfriend had Googled me, and then that TikTok came up above my TikTok, and then people were like, it was getting engagement, which is crazy because like I hate TikTok. I don't use it. I don't like it. I only have like 2,000 followers on TikTok, which shocks people because I'm like a YouTube girly. I've been a YouTube girly since 2008 when YouTube like came out. I don't like other social media. YouTube is my girl. But they were like posting things with ads and people were asking questions in the comments, and it was like I lost sleep over it because I was like, oh my God, they're gonna post things about me and they're gonna have like my narrative and they're gonna share things I don't want to share. Because sometimes I'll post a video and then I'm like, I don't feel comfortable with that video. And I can just take it down and move on. It's not something freakish, and it's just like I want to move on from it. Ew. And then like I don't have control over that when it's somebody else posting pretending to be me. But then I went and reported it and TikTok was like, no, you're not you. And then I made a video about it. And the TikTok people went and reported it for me, which felt nice. You know, it's like, oh, people will support you in that way. And they got it taken down, but in a way, it's kind of blacklisted my account. So now it's like my TikTok is just dead. And I'm like, okay, all right. I didn't like you anyway. And then when TikTok got banned, I'm like, thank God, what a weight off my shoulders. And they got reinstated. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm never going to be free of this. Like, yay, free speech and all that. But like, rats for me personally. It takes so much time to grow on other platforms. I have a few high school students reach out to me sometimes where they're like, I'm doing a essay or presentation on like a modern artist and I wanted to do it on you. Can I have some info? And I always love sharing with them that like I never watched YouTube shorts until like I was having a really low day and my friends were like, come play Minecraft with us. And so I didn't know anything about the new Minecraft updates. This is very Gen Z. Didn't know anything about the Minecraft updates, so I had to go and find videos on it, but there was no full-length videos. There was only YouTube shorts. And so I was like, I'll watch one. And then I got addicted to them because that's how they work. And I felt like such a time waste, but then I was like, wait a minute. YouTube keeps re-recommending videos to me. There should be like millions of these videos. Why am I seeing the same video twice over a period of time? And then I realized, oh, there's a gap of content for YouTube shorts. That means I could make YouTube shorts. And so I did make YouTube shorts. And now it's my career. All thanks to Minecraft. Which I think is funny. It's just the trail of events. It's so silly. Throughout. You think that like in a year's time you're going to be doing something maybe, and then like in a year you're like, oh, you own your own car, you're in your own place, you're doing your own thing, you have your own art business, you're doing taxes as a small business, you have a tax ID number now. Life is unpredictable. It's so silly.
I'm going to have to have you on again as a guest because we've run over time, and normally these are only 1 hour, and I could talk to you for another hour easily. So I'll have to have you on again for a second episode. What social media platforms would you like people to go to support you and to see your work? Which ones do you use and would you like to promote?
My three big use are YouTube. That's obviously the largest one. Instagram, I post stills of things, so I'll actually take photos of the work. So if you're like, I actually want to see what's happening in the work, Instagram's a great place to do that. And then my store, you can actually just see my work. And if you're interested in it, you can go and like get a mystery illustration of fate, and then you have a piece of my artwork in your house. Those are the three big places. I am not on TikTok with an extra T. I don't know if that guy resprouted. He could be like a hydra and have an extra head. I wouldn't know.
We'll have your website, your TikTok, and your YouTube linked in the description of the video and of the audio platforms. We recommend all of the listeners and viewers to go and check out the links, support the artist. It's fantastic work. You've been incredibly generous with your time. I really appreciate you being on. Thank you for being a guest.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'll come on another time if you want me, but I
Yes.
do rant. I got one thing going for me. It's my ability to keep talking.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that episode. If you can support the podcast by leaving a like or a comment down below, that'd really be great. But what we'd really like is if you're able to leave a review on the podcast channels, wherever you listen to it or download it, because that helps us get spread around the internet so that more people have access to us and able to see what we're making.
Also, follow us on Instagram, and we'd really appreciate it if you like and engage with our posts. Help get the podcast better known. Thanks for listening.